I call this a beautiful day with rain, you know. I'm really glad she lowered the microphone. It's perfect for me. Thank you. Well, greetings to everyone. As the others have mentioned, we do appreciate being able to cybercast. I'm sure the folks out there that are watching are very pleased that we provide that service. And we can also say hi to the Trey Bakes. They will be checking us to see how this all went. I recently just got back from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, just on Thursday night, a very short trip. And I've been traveling, you know, here and there. No long trips, you know, lately, but I've got Indonesia on my mind. So we'll see how that goes. A number of asked me over the last couple of weeks about Mr. Justice, Mr. Tom Justice, who came down with pneumonia at the feast. He actually already had it. He was so desperate to come to the feast with us, he didn't want to miss it. So he came anyway, but on Monday of the feast, we had to rush him to emergency, and he's 85 years old, and he just wasn't happy about going to the hospital even then. But he has survived. That's the really good news. We got him home on the Sunday after the feast, and he's doing much better. He's on oxygen, and we had to cart him across country in a van that we rented on full oxygen. But at 85, I would say he's doing quite well now. So we thank you for all your prayers, any of those that were aware of that. You know, every day we see things that cry out for justice. It just screams out for justice in this world. Evil people doing evil things constantly. You cannot pick up your paper and read through even just today's paper without, you know, coming on all kinds of evils that are going on in the world. Rapes of young children, murders of infants. So we see murders, rapes, the savages of war when you read about the atrocities that are going on in Syria. By both sides, it doesn't matter. They'll line up innocents of the other side and just slaughter them. Where is the justice? Where is the justice? In Iraq. Oh, we've exited Iraq, but it's very rapidly going back into the same condition as before we left and during the early days of the war, with bombs and killings and mayhem every single day. So where is the justice? And then there's just the regular old mistreatment of people. Mistreatment of the elderly, mistreatment of children. We all want justice to be done, don't we? We all want justice. We cry for justice to be done. But whose justice? Whose justice are we waiting for? Now, my sister Becky is a judge over in Gregg County, and she metes out justice according to the laws of the state of Texas, not God's laws. And the fact that some of those laws collide is a good thing for society. But she's known as Maximum Beck. If you get into her court, you're probably in trouble. So stay out of Gregg County. If you're going to do the crime, you will do the time. So what is justice? What is justice anyway? Today I want to talk about justice for all. And it's a little bit of what that song we just listened to was about, ultimate justice for all. Let's look at the definition of justice just for a moment. From dictionary.com, as a noun, it means the quality of being just. Righteousness. Oh, yes, it says that in your dictionary. Righteousness is a definition of justice. Equitableness. And moral rightness, rightfulness, or lawfulness as of a claim of or title, justice of a ground or of reason. The moral principle determining just conduct and conformity to this principle as manifested in conduct, just conduct, dealings, and treatment of others. It's also administering of deserved punishment or reward. So there's a lot of things wrapped up in the word justice. A couple of idioms we would normally say would be bring to justice, which is to cause to come before a court for trial and to receive your punishment for one's misdeeds. So that would be bringing people to justice. But to do justice, another idiom, to do justice, to act or treat justly or fairly, or appreciate properly. Now, I've got a slightly different definition or two from the World English Dictionary, and it says the first is the quality or fact of being just. And then it goes into the ethics and the principle of fairness, that like cases should be treated alike. A particular distribution of benefits or burdens fairly in accordance with a particular set of principles. Or the principle that punishment should be proportionate to the offense. Now we see many things that are disproportionate. We had a rape situation. Where was it? One of the Dakotas, maybe. Where the judge gave the perpetrator 30 days in jail, for a rape. Well, that wasn't justice. But the administration of law according to prescribed and accepted principles, and also conformity to the law, legal validity. And the word comes from the Old French and from Latin, justitia. And then it says, from justus. J-U-S-T-U-S. Well, it just so happens I married a J-U-S-T-U-S. So justice is the family name. Let's look at a few principles of justice as we continue here. If you'll turn over to Exodus 23. Exodus 23. And we'll just begin in verse 1. These are some principles of justice that God gave the children of Israel right after the Ten Commandments. These are principles that they were to live by, live their whole lives by. Chapter 23 and verse 1. You shall not circulate a false report. Wow. How often does that happen? We talk evil about people. We gossip. You should not circulate a false report. Do not put your hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. Trials are full of people lying, even under oath. We see it constantly, and we know they're lying. Everyone knows they're lying, but they lie anyway. He told the Israelites, don't throw in with the wicked and unrighteous witnesses. Verse 2, you shall not follow a crowd to do evil. Didn't your mother always tell you that? If all the kids are going to jump off a bridge, are you going to jump with them? Well, most of us as young people, we do tend to follow the crowd, unfortunately. We have to resist that. We have to resist following a crowd that's bent on nothing but evil. And of course, in society, we have crowd following. We have evildoers that are very, very prominent. And people just lap it up. They just lap up this of the conduct that they represent. You shall not follow a crowd to do evil, nor shall you testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after many to pervert justice. You shall not show partiality to a poor man in his dispute. They say that justice is blind, but justice in this country and around the world often depends on how much money you invest. If you're rich, you can hire the best lawyers and, you know, put on the best show and pull out the most tricks. You can win just perverting justice. You shall not show partiality to a poor man in his dispute. If a poor man comes before the judge and a rich man, the poor man should get equal attention. Verse 4, if you meet your enemy's ox or his donkey going astray, you will surely bring it back to him again. Now, this actually happens to us around here. We'll be driving down a country road, and lo and behold, the cows have got out. There they are along the road. Well, too bad. I bet a couple of them get run over, but you don't do anything about it. We've got to make the effort. We have to make an effort to do exactly what we're instructed here. If your enemies, even your enemy's ox, this is not even your buddy down the road. This is somebody you really don't even care for. If they go astray, you'll surely bring it back to him. Perform the just work. Perform the just work. And if you see the donkey of one who hates you lying under its burden, and you would refrain from helping it, you shall surely help him with it. That's your enemy again. If you see a deed that needs to be done, if you see, you know, someone in trouble, they're broken down on the road, sure, you can't stop for everyone. And in our society, there are ploys to get people to stop, and it could be dangerous. But we need to have in our mind that we're willing to help others. We're willing to do the just thing. Verse 6, you shall not pervert the judgment of your poor in his dispute. The same thing. Weigh the facts equally. Keep yourself far from a false matter. When you hear something scurrilous, if someone's telling you a story about somebody else and it's scurrilous, how many of us are just willing to walk away? Just walk away. Don't listen to it. Don't listen to it. Keep yourself far from a false matter. Do not kill the innocent and the righteous, for I will not justify the wicked. Who are the innocent of the world? Children? And the righteous? And how many abortions are done that kill the innocent? Don't kill the innocent or the righteous. God won't justify it. That's not right. It's part of His law. And you shall take no bribe, verse 8, for a bribe blinds the discerning and perverts the words of the righteous. I say, well, people aren't trying to bribe us. You know, no one comes up to us and tries to bribe us. They don't always call it bribes, but the government is full of payoffs to friends, to supporters. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. When you're doing business overseas, there's often hands held out under the table to take bribe money. Our company refuses to do it. Now, some of our distributors say, well, that's the only way you can do business. That's the only way they operate. We're not going to be involved in that. In verse 9, also, you shall not oppress a stranger, for you know the heart of a stranger, because you were strangers in the land of Egypt. They were strangers, and they were treated well by the people that were left, that survived the takeover. They were in a strange land. They were in a strange land in Egypt when they were extricated. These instructions, these little instructions here represent justice. They represent justice and God's call for justice for all. We can find the overriding principle in Matthew 22. If you'll turn over there, Matthew 22. The overriding godly principle behind every one of these laws and rules. In verse 37, Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment, love God. And the second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." All the law hang on these two overriding great commandments, these principles that we're to operate by. Love your neighbor as yourself. Well, we definitely love ourselves. We know that. So if we can just extrapolate that kind of love to our neighbor, to our friends, to our church brethren, to even strangers. Those are God's priorities. That's what God's interested in. You know, what we're interested in and what God's interested in are often two different things. I typically am interested in me. Oh, everything revolves around me. I certainly want justice for myself. Hey, I deserve it, don't I? I deserve justice. So I'm interested in me. And on a good day, really good day, I'm interested in, my family. Yeah, I'm really interested in my family as well. They're important to me. And certainly they deserve justice. And on a really good day, I'm interested in the people I like, my friends, and the people especially that like me. I'm really interested in them. And then on a really phenomenal day, a day when the Spirit is working in you, really spiritual day, you might be interested in people that you don't like. So we can see that our interests are somewhat different than God's interest and the way He wants us to operate. We all want justice, but what we all start with what we perceive to be justice to us. We all consider ourselves to be fair people. You're fair, right? You're fair in dealing with people. I'm fair. Everyone's fair, right? No, if everyone's fair, this would be the kingdom of God. We think we're fair people who practice justice, but often our justice is just what we perceive and not God's reality of justice. Well, we could say that justice is equal treatment. It's equality. But only through God's justice, because equality doesn't always mean that. It is equal treatment that rests at the heart of one of the most profound calls to justice that's ever been spoken. I would refer to a speech by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., made in Washington, D.C. in 1963, which was titled, "I Have a Dream." Now, we probably have many thoughts about Dr. King, and some might be quite negative. But I want you to listen to what he said in this speech. Let's just listen. Dr. King's dream was for freedom, and the word appears over 20 times in the speech. But what was the crucial element of that freedom that he sought for people? It was justice. Equal treatment for all. So let me read you a few of the quotes here. "This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to open the doors of opportunity to all of God's children. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood." Sometimes we tend to forget that there's massive injustice in the world. Not here, not just racial injustice, but injustice against women, injustice against children, nations that are a bit, you know, completely are unjust in the way they treat their people. Another quote, "The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But there is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred." He goes on to say, no, we are not satisfied and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like water and righteousness from a mighty stream. And that was a quote from Amos 5:24 that says, "But let justice run down like water and righteousness like a mighty stream." It was in a prophecy about the day of the Lord. He continues, "I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a desert state, sweltering with the heat of injustice and oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character." Now I ask you, brethren, how could you disagree with those words? We can't disagree with those words. Sometimes very imperfect people say very inspirational things. And he was right. It is about the character. It is about our character. And it's about how we treat others. No one would argue that equality is a big part of justice. But just as judgment, more, much more is needed. For what if equal justice is equally poor, equally bad justice? That happens around the world. You take the Chinese one-child policy. Oh, that applied to everyone equally. Oh, so everyone's baby gets killed if it's the second one. Is that justice? That's not God's justice. Man could call that, oh, that's equality. We have to have equality in all things. Now, more recently, we have marriage equality, where gays are free to marry and have all the status of marriage. Does God approve? No. God does not approve. That's not in God's definition of justice, or equality for that matter. So none of that represents God's justice. Does that make the law a just law when people pass laws like the new marriage law or many other laws in this country that are passed to try to equalize things? No, it doesn't. Equal justice or equality is just a part of justice, but it's not all of justice. There's a higher standard that's required, a higher standard, and that's God's standard. Remember the definition of righteousness, of justice? Number two was righteousness. Justice or judgment is equality, but it's not necessarily righteousness. We're doing what is right. Doing what is right is justice and righteousness. So justice is doing the right thing according to God's laws, according to God's standards. In the Bible, these two concepts are very closely intertwined that often the translators don't know which term to use, justice or righteousness, when it comes up. And so who decides what's right in our society? Not God. Not God. God will always be the ultimate determiner of what is right. And that is why only He can establish real justice in this world. So what does God ask of us? What does He expect of us? What does He require of us? In Matthew 23 and verse 23, Jesus gives us a warning. Matthew 23 and verse 23, it says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone." This is what God wants us to pay attention to. These are three real fundamental things: justice, mercy, and faith. In Galatians 6 and verse 7, we find a fundamental principle of God's justice. How would you describe God's justice? In verse 7. We'll begin in verse 7. "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked." We can't fake God out. Lying on the stand never faked God out. "For whatever a man sows, that will he also reap. For he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption. But he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life." That is God's principle of justice. We reap what we sow. If a farmer sows, you know, soybeans, he's going to reap soybeans. He's not going to get corn out of that crop. Whatever we do, God's justice will apply, and we will reap what we sow. Again, what does God ask of us? Let's turn over to Micah. Turn over to Micah 6. And we'll just read verse 8 at the moment. What does God ask of us? Micah 6, verse 8. "He has shown you, O man..." That's all of us, O man, all mankind, O man. "What is good and what does the Lord require of you? But to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God." The people were asking Micah in that day, what does God want from us? What are we supposed to do? Micah responds with a very simple, very direct message. He says, "Do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with your Lord." There's a call very much like that in Isaiah. If you turn to Isaiah 1. Isaiah 1. Verses 16 and 17. This is a call to repentance to the nation of Judah. It says in verse 16, "Wash yourselves, make yourselves clean, put away the evil of your doings from before my eyes. Cease to do evil." That's very simple, but very hard to conform to. Wash yourselves, make yourselves clean. He wants us to be clean, unspotted, especially those of us in the church that are called. He wants us to be unspotted. Put away the evil of your doings from before my eyes. Cease to do evil. Learn to do good. Learn to do good. That means that some of us probably need to go to school on doing good. That's the way I take that. Learn to do good. Seek justice. Rebuke the oppressor. Defend the fatherless. Plead for the widow. Does that sound like any society that you're aware of on this earth today? It doesn't. It just doesn't. Learn to do good. Seek justice. Rebuke the oppressor. Defend the fatherless. Plead for the widow. That's our same charge today. We can read that and it applies to us. God wants us to be those kind of people. Let's go back to Micah, if we could, for a few minutes here. Let's go back to Micah. We're going to get a little background of what was going on that led up to Micah 6, verse 8. The Spanish philosopher George Santayana has famously stated that the great truth that those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. One of the greatest mistakes that Israel and Judah made was that they forgot who they were. They lost track of who they were, what their history was. They lost their sense of identity. They were the covenant people after all. We heard in the sermonette the birthright that they were given. They were the covenant people, and yet they forgot that. They lost that. And they gradually drifted away from living lives the way that God had ordered them way back in Exodus. Exodus 20, 21, 22, 23. They forgot how to live. Well, God had given them warnings before. God had given them warnings. In Deuteronomy 6 and verse 12. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 12. It says, "Then beware." Watch out. Pay attention. "Lest you forget the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage." God knew this was going to be a problem. He warned them early on. Beware lest you forget the Lord. Again, in Deuteronomy 8. Deuteronomy 8, in verse 11. "Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping His commandments, His judgments, and His statutes, which I have commanded you today. Lest when you have eaten and are full, and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and your gold are multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, when your heart is lifted up, when you become proud and arrogant, that you forget the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage." They were warned when things are good, that's an easy time to forget about God. We don't need God when things are going perfectly, right? When do people cry out the most to God? It's when they're in trouble. When you're not in trouble, you're less likely. We have to fight this because we are the people that our herds and flocks are multiplied. We are the envy of everyone on earth in this country because of all that we have. And our silver and gold multiplied. Maybe you don't think you have enough money, but compared to about 98% of the rest of the world, you are loaded. You are loaded. So our heart can be puffed up. We can be lifted up. We can be arrogant. Hey, God, you know, things are going good now. We need God when we're suffering, but sometimes we don't think that we need God as much as we do when everything is going well. That was a very explicit warning. And what happened in Israel and Judah happened over and over and over again. A good king would come to power. They would begin obeying God again. And yet, immediately, after a short duration, they would forget God. They would turn to evil, to idols, to all the sins of all their neighbors around them. Even Paul, in the Hebrews, and we assume it's Paul, in Hebrews 3, verses 12, also gives us a warning. Hebrews 3. Hebrews 3. In verse 12, it says, "Beware, brethren." Pay attention, brethren. "Lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily, while it is called a day, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin." Beware, brethren. Beware that an evil exists all around us, and we are subject to that influence on a regular basis. We can't depart from the living God. He calls us, as we heard in the sermonette, He calls us to be a part of something really grand, really great, to be a son of God. But we can depart. We can run the other way. And people do. We've seen this so many times over and over. We can't depart from God and from His laws and His justice. Once again, we will reap what we sow. We will reap what we sow. Let's turn back to Micah again. We took a little diversion there. And let's look at what was going on here. In verse 1, "Hear now what the Lord says. Arise, plead your case before the mountains, and let the hills hear your voice. Hear, O you mountains, the Lord's complaint, and you strong foundations of the earth, for the Lord has a complaint against His people." He had a complaint against the Jews, and if we're not careful, He can have a complaint against us. A complaint against us. Because, why? We're not paying attention to God. We're not focused on living the life that He's called us to. "For the Lord has a complaint against His people, and He will contend with Israel." He was telling them, okay, I'm going to contend with you. You're going to have your comeuppance from all your evil ways. In verse 3, "O my people, what have I done to you? And how have I wearied you? Testify to me. Tell me what I've done for you to act this way and for you to treat your God who has saved you with such disrespect and disdain." Verse 4, "For I brought you up from the land of Egypt. I redeemed you from the house of bondage. I sent before you Moses, Aaron, and Miriam." He'd done all this, but, oh, that was easily forgotten. That was easily forgotten. They had those good times, and then they've had a lot of bad times in between, but they couldn't equate the bad times with disobedience, unfortunately. It was not clear to them that their actions were directly responsible for what happened to them, cause and effect, sowing and reaping for the nation. He says in verse 5, "O my people, remember now what Balak, king of Moab, counseled and what Balaam, the son of Beor, answered him. For Acacia Grove to Gilgal, that you may know the righteousness of the Lord. And then the people respond. The people say back in verse 6, with what shall I come before the Lord? What do you want me to do, Lord? I'll give it a try. I don't know if they were really being serious here in their response, or in a sense they were being very, very flippant about it. With what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before the high God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings? If it's just a few offerings, I'm with you. I'll bring them. Let's just get this straightened out. It's time for you to save us again. I'll bring you a few offerings, sure. With calves a year old, will the Lord be pleased with 1,000 of rams? Hey, if it takes 1,000, I bet we can gather up 1,000 for you, Lord. You do your part, we'll bring you the 1,000. I think their attitude was completely, completely wrong. Will the Lord be pleased with 1,000 of rams, 10,000 rivers of oil? So they're getting ludicrous here in their offers to God. 10,000 rivers of oil. Well, how about I give my firstborn son? Will that satisfy you? I'll give you my kid. Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression? What's it going to take, Lord, to get you back on our side? What am I going to have to do for you to save us? You want my firstborn? Got it. Want rivers of oil? We'll make it happen. Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression? The fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? God answers this foolishness. He answers this foolishness. Verse 8, he has shown you, O man, what is good. He has shown you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? Not all this stuff you're trying to make up and earn your way into my forgiveness. None of that's going to work. What does the Lord require of you but to do justly, to love mercy. To love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. That was it. It was pretty simple, really. Oh, but it was so hard to do. Goes on to say, the Lord's voice cries to the city, wisdom shall see your name. Hear the rod. Who has appointed it? Listen up, Judah. The rod. Do you hear it coming? The rod that's going to break your back, that's going to beat you to a pulp, is coming. Do you hear it? Are you listening? Do you hear the rod coming to smite you? That's what God is saying. Verse 10, and there yet the treasures of wickedness. Oh, they had, you know, some of them had treasures, yes. But the treasures of their wicked ways were not going to save them. That's not going to save them. Are there yet the treasures of wickedness in the house of the wicked? And the short measure that is an abomination. God hated the way that they treated one another. He says the short measure. Cheating people. That's an abomination. Shall I count pure those with the wicked scales? Are you going to come to me because you want to sacrifice something and get my forgiveness, and then you pull out your scales and you cheat the poor? You cheat the poor on wicked scales. Scales that don't serve justice. And with the bag of deceitful weights? Oh, they were money shavers. Oh, they shaved the edges of that money off so they could cheat people. It was a standard practice. It was the way they operated. And that's what made God just sick. Sick of their society. And he told them exactly in verse 8 what he expected of them, what he wanted. Shall I count pure those with wicked scales and with the bag of deceitful weights? For her rich men are full of violence. Guess how they got rich? Violence. That's how they acquired their wealth. Go kill so-and-so, and I'll get his vineyard, and then I'll have all these grapes. We'll sell all this wine, and we'll be rich. Her rich men are full of violence. That's how they got their wealth. Her inhabitants have spoken lies. Lying was standard procedure. Fraud and deceit. Fraud and deceit was gripping the whole nation. Fraud and deceit. And their tongue is deceitful in their mouth. Lying lips. Lying tongue. They were perverting justice. The justice of God. The laws of God. These laws were being perverted in every conceivable way. And the rod was about to come down on their head. Judgment was coming on them because the people of God no longer were living as the people of God. They were called to be the people of God. But you have to live like the people of God. We are called to be the people of God, and we have to live like the people of God. Instead, there was corruption, oppression, bribery, injustice. And the people, tragically, could not even see what was going wrong. To them, this was just normal way that the society ran. They did not know that something had gone wrong radically in their society. But it was all about how they were treating others. It was all about justice in the society and how they were treating others. So what does God want us to be or to do? God wants us to be humble. He wants us to be humble. He wants us to act with kindness to all. And to be just in our way of life. The Bible, from top to bottom, you can read and find out the life of Christ and what justice looks like. We are called as Christians to live by Christ's example. And Christ's example, and if we look at the life that he led in the Gospels, we see these three components that are mentioned in verse 8 of Micah 6. To do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly. Those three things were the hallmarks of Christ's ministry. We see these three very commands that are fulfilled all through his ministry on earth. Jesus Christ called for justice in all its forms, religious, social, and political. And we don't have justice in any of those three now on this earth. But he called for that kind of justice. And he called for people to be treated as God's people, treat everyone as if they are a child of God, because he wishes that all are to be saved. He wants everyone to be there. He doesn't want to lose a single one of us. And he doesn't want to lose a single one of our enemies. And he doesn't want to lose any of the despicable people that operate the societies that we live in. They're all going to get their chance. He wants them all to be saved. At the same time, he called for righteous behavior. He requires righteous behavior from us. And righteous behavior and treatment for and from all of us. For all people and from all people. At the same time, he walked an exceptional, humble life. Never exalted himself. Never placed himself above those whom he served, those who he taught. He was the servant. As we see when we take our Passover. So Jesus Christ would certainly endorse these words from John Wesley, who said, "Do all the good you can, by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as ever you can." That's good. That's good. That's how we have to live our lives. Just exactly. John Wesley had it right. Where did he get that? I believe he got it straight out of the Bible. Right out of the New Testament and the life of Christ. So justice for all is coming. That's the good news. There will be justice for all. And we can be a part of it. Jesus Christ is going to usher in this time of justice and peace. But we have to do our part now. Our time is now in practicing and promoting and preaching justice and dealing justly in all of our dealings with others, keeping in mind that we will reap what we sow. And finally, if you turn over to Isaiah 42. Isaiah 42. And we'll begin in verse 1. It says, "Behold my servant whom I uphold." This is a prophecy of Jesus Christ. It's a prophecy of Jesus Christ. "Behold my servant whom I uphold, my elect one in whom my soul delights. I have put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the Gentiles. He will not cry out, nor raise his voice, nor cause his voice to be heard in the street. A bruised reed he will not break, and smoking flax he will not quench. He will bring forth justice for truth. He will not fail nor be discouraged till he has established justice in the earth." This is the mission of Jesus Christ and our future mission and what we can be a part of. "Till he has established justice in the earth, and the coastlines shall wait for his law." Justice, God's law. They're together. Justice, God's law, righteousness. In this prophecy, it says he's going to bring nations the justice that they deserve. In faithfulness, he's going to bring forth justice. In faithfulness to us who are his followers. In faithfulness to the world that needs it so dramatically. "He will not falter or be discouraged until he establishes justice on the earth." That's what we have to look forward to. God's law ultimately establishes justice for all on this earth.